I'm Bill Littlefield. Oh, what's that? It's the sound of the new college football season. But this week on Three Stories You Should Know, we're not going to talk about powerhouses like Alabama or Oklahoma. We're going to talk about a team from Division III. Joining me now are Will Leach from Sports on Earth and Claire McNear from The Ringer. Welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
Claire, tell us about this Division III football team.
So my alma mater, the University of Chicago, is decidedly not a football school. It was once, a long, long time ago. It was a co-founder of the Big Ten. It was home of the first Heisman Trophy, routinely played in front of crowds of 50,000. And then the team was disbanded in the 30s by a president who, he had some quote about saying every time he felt the urge to exercise, he would lie down until it passed. But football eventually came back in the 70s, and the team has often not been very good. But now the school wants more. So they hired a new coach in 2013, and they also took on a new athletic director, and they came from Dartmouth and Princeton, respectively. The university has been pouring money into building out homecoming as a big event for alumni to come to and families to go to, and with drinks, tailgating, which does not exist at the University of Chicago, or at least did not in recent years. I was just there, not that long ago. And I mean, there's this old joke on campus that most kids don't even know there is a football team. So they've started posting flyers around campus explaining the basic rules of the game. This is what a touchdown is. Unclear if they're meant to be parody, but they're there nonetheless. So I guess the question is, how do you build a football culture at a school that doesn't have one?
Well, I am a graduate of the University of Illinois Champaign, and so I've been watching the Illinois football team for a long time. So I know this seems like a hard, difficult project for the University of Chicago, but the bar to clear the best college football program in the state of Illinois is actually quite low. This is actually not going to be too hard for the University of Chicago. So they were an original member of the Big Ten. I remember being a kid and being very confused that Illinois and Chicago had once been the Big Ten together. And Claire, I think there's a mention in your piece, the idea that there basically is an ongoing standing invitation to get Chicago back in the Big Ten. I am supportive of this idea. They certainly make more sense of the Big Ten than Rutgers.
I'm not sure why a college would think it's a good idea to crank up a football program these days, even Division III. Maybe this is because I've been reading too many stories about football players who wish they'd taken up another sport instead. As far as I'm concerned, a campus where students don't know there's a football team is preferable to one where they have a football team and paint their faces funny colors in order to support it. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a way that you can do both a little bit. The University of Chicago is proudly Division III. They talk a lot about how their athletes are students first, and they'll miss practice to go to a class or study for a test or something like that. But having been in Hyde Park for 4 years, I think that, if there's some fun on the weekends that everybody can get excited about, that probably wouldn't be a terrible thing.
All right, moving to baseball. Last I heard, and maybe I wasn't paying enough attention, former Cardinals manager Tony La Russa accomplished the incredible feat of going out on top as a World Series winner. But I wasn't paying enough attention to the National League West. At least, Will, what's going on?
The author William Goldman has a great quote saying that baseball managers wake up every morning with the knowledge that sooner or later they're going to get fired. Tony La Russa was the one manager, a Hall of Fame manager, one of the three most winning managers of all time. In 2011, in mid-August, he privately told his bosses, I'm going to retire at the end of this season. During that season, the Cardinals were 10 games out of first place. What happened? This Cardinal fan is happy to tell you. The Cardinals made an incredible comeback and ended up winning the World Series in the most exciting way possible. So La Russa really had this moment, which means, of course, he has come back and ruined it. So he decided that he could not, like many competitors, Tony La Russa wanted to get back out there. So he's not a manager. He's the general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks have turned into a disaster in the 2 years that La Russa has been running them. The idea that this Hall of Famer, the third winningest manager of all time, the guy that went out in the perfect way, he just could not let it go. And now he's getting to the situation that all managers face. He's going to get fired like all of them do.
I mean, certainly that, he's suffering in the present. But I think in the end, his record is going to go down as what it is, which is very successful. And probably the darker patches will be glossed over in the end. I'm interested in, you know, whether it's more difficult to accept success and walk away as a manager or as an athlete, and, you know, what it is that drives the person to come back.
It's interesting because a player can fool themselves into thinking, I can do it myself. Michael Jordan would be the most famous example of this. Coming back to Washington, he's like, trust me, I'm Michael Jordan. I'm going to win championships. I can do it. It did not. And now we all try to pretend that didn't happen. Maybe that's what happened with Tony La Russa. But I think with a manager, you know, I think most managers, and La Russa may be the exception on this, most managers understand that the success of their team is mostly out of their control. Earl Weaver famously said that the reason the manager is the one that gets thrown out of the game is because you don't really need a manager. The manager can go and the team will be just fine. And so I think that La Russa has always kind of felt like he can control things and he can make things happen. And I think that ultimately may end up being his fatal flaw.
This does bring up, Will, one of those sports topics that never dies. Some people, of course, are going to say Tony La Russa should have taken advantage of the opportunity to go out on top because, as you say, it's an opportunity managers almost never get. But managers, like athletes, have to be allowed the opportunity to exercise free will. It's not finally my business to say Willie Mays should have retired before he did, although it still sort of hurts to remember him stumbling in center field. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stop now and send it back to you, Will.
Oh, heavens, that's like a very dark. Well, if it does make you feel better, I, as someone that was not around when Willie Mays finished his career, I only think of Willie Mays doing amazing things.
And that's how it should be, yes, exactly. No matter when somebody retires. I want to talk about baseball as well. The Chicago White Sox announced this week that the ballpark in which they play will be known as Guaranteed Rate Field. And the new name has nothing to do with holding down ticket prices. It has to do with a company that bought the naming rights to the place. Among the alternative suggestions that have already surfaced on Twitter are, we still call it Comiskey Park anyway, Field. Probably the most honest name for the stadium would be guaranteed to be called Guaranteed Rate until some other corporation offers us more, Field, or for simplicity's sake, For Sale Stadium, something like that. This has been going on for a long time. I hope the Dodgers always play in Dodger Stadium. I hope Wrigley Field continues to be Wrigley Field. Can somebody come up with a better name for the place in Chicago?
I saw a lot of Twitter was suggesting it should be like Harambe Park.
Harambe Park.
Twitter recommends that for everything.
This is true. But I really do think Harambe would have loved it.
My general thought on this is when a company signs a deal with a stadium, even if the company goes out of business, it should be stuck with that name forever. The example I use on this in 2000-2001, Enron Field in Houston, Texas, they signed a deal for the Astros to be playing there, a 30-year deal. I think the best punishment that the Houston Astros could have gotten for making that name is it would have to still, in 2016 until 2030, be known as Enron Field. I think that I still call it Enron Field today. It's Minute Maid Park, but to my mind, it's always Enron Field. And, you know, to me, that is a large part of the fun of this. You can name it whatever you want. Barry Petrovsky wrote a great piece for Deadspin about this, about how, you know, you can call it Guaranteed Rate Field. You can call it the unfortunate logo with an arrow going down, which that'll get the crowd excited when they go to watch. But you really can call it whatever you want. You can call it this. You can call it Comiskey Park. You can call it White Sox Place, because deep down, the White Sox, they have to call it this horrible name. The sponsors have to call it this horrible name, but we're not getting any money from them, so we can call it whatever we want.
I mean, you know, just anything, even with an arrow pointing up or in an upward direction, would have been an improvement.
My guests for this week's three stories you should know have been The Ringer's Claire McNear and Sports on Earth's Will Leach. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.